One man clapping. I am the one man, and this is a podcast about board gaming culture, and growing old gracelessly. And today I am joined once again by the man fast becoming OMC's bonus episode creative director, Super Trooper. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
So Super Trooper has come up with a whole list of potential bonus episodes, and I thought, well, who better to direct these than the man I play more games with than anyone else? So here we are, back at the table recording again. It is Saturday morning in sunny Australia. Not Sunday Australia, it's Sunday tomorrow. I'm only on my third coffee, forgive me, clappers. And you may hear a bit of a whine or hiss in the background. That is because the cicadas in Australia have decided that they are going full... what was that movie? With the bugs coming over the hillside, the only good bug's a dead
bug. Starship Troopers.
Yes, they've gone full Starship Troopers out on the Australian bush, and you can't even have a conversation outside the house. So if you hear a gentle hum, hiss, whine, moan in the background, it is not my children, it is the Australian cicadas. On with the show! Alright, so this episode is... I'm handing over to Super Trooper.
It's a top 10, but I don't know if it is top 10, but it's 10 this or that's. I said we're going to choose two board game related things. It could be games, it could be other things. I think the ones I'm going to pose to James here are all games, and just making him choose between two of them.
As long as my children aren't on the list, we're all good. I took the proposal that Super Trooper made and took it to the nth degree and imagined that this is the Thanos snap for whatever you don't choose. Whatever you don't choose is vaporized from the face of the earth. And he's corrected me and said, no, it's not quite that horrifyingly...
I'm not that evil.
Not that evil. My middle daughter loves to play Would You Rather? Would you rather have hands for feet or feet for hands? So this kind of has that same sort of smell. So... I guess with that in mind, I'm going to hand over. We'll get kicked off. We'll hand over to Super Trooper for his number 10 question of this or that, or would you rather?
So this or that, James. A nice easy one to start with. Cascadia or Harmonies?
Okay, I figured this was going to hit the list. I almost put it on the list for you, but I know your choice. I know what you would choose. So Cascadia or Harmonies? This is actually harder than just choosing one because... Straight up gameplay, and the way it looks, and the way it feels, and just the flow. It would be Harmonies every day of the week. Cascadia, we've been playing Cascadia for 2-3 years, so it's got a real soft spot, and I really love the angst that just nudges up against the Calico conundrum of, well, if I put my eagle there, I'm screwing my elk for all time, and Harmonies doesn't quite have that. I mean, it does. But Harmonies also has that game's over, mofo. You thought you had 3 more turns, whereas with Cascadia, you can kind of see the end of the game coming. So
what's the answer?
I think Harmonies nudges it out. I'm going to say Harmonies. Okay. I love them both, but I'm going to say Harmonies.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a real close race for me, and I know it's not a close race for you necessarily, but it's a real close race for me. So my number 10 for you, I want you to imagine the Thanos snap for this one. We'll release you from that for the rest of all
time. Okay,
But for this one, you're going to choose one of these two, and the other one is gone. Is that
interesting?
Marvel United or Marvel Champions? Now, for those of you who don't know, Super Trooper is Marvel mad. He loves both of these games. I think I know what he'd pick, but over to you.
To keep.
And you can never play the other one.
I would choose Marvel United.
And why?
I think... it's easier to play. I think there is definitely more game in Marvel Champions, but Marvel United is much easier to play. The plug and play is easier to do than Marvel Champions, and I can play it with more people.
Okay.
The bubble plays it, Buttercup plays it with me, whereas Marvel Champions is mainly a solo affair for me.
Okay. And if you stack all your Marvel Champions on top of each other, is it taller than Beelzebub?
Tower of Babel, I think, is the... is the thing. Trying to reach the gods.
All right. Very good. On to number 9 then.
Number 9. So, we had Cascadia Harmonies.
Uh-huh.
So, the number 9, Scholars of the South Tigris and...
Uh-huh.
What do you reckon the next one's going to be?
Scholars? What's up against Scholars? Ark Nova.
No. I thought you were going to say Wayfarers, but
no. Oh, no.
No, Scholars and Carnegie.
Ooh, I love both of these games. Oh. That's a good one. Okay, so Scholars. I love... When it's your turn, you just go down this rabbit hole of, I only have 2 dice left, but I can actually do 35 things with them. I love that. Carnegie's less so. Carnegie's like, I've got 3 things I can do. What's my best one? The other thing that I love about Carnegie is you have no idea what the board's going to look like when it comes back around to you. Even in a 2-player game, because the setup has this sort of diminishing returns. If you're setting up on a 2-player game, we're blocking off more of the board. But also, if you're playing 3 or 4 players, by the time it comes round to you, it's a bit like 3-Ring Circus that way. The board can look very differently. I think I'm going to say Scholars for that one. Because...
Scholars to keep?
Scholars to keep. Because I think it's got more decision space. And I think the decision space is a little more interesting. I love Carnegie, and I think one of the things I love about Carnegie is no matter how big you're planning, you got 20 turns and it's done. That's it. That timer is always in your face. But I think it's going to be Scholars. Just nudges it out. Or my number 9 for you is not about specific games. It's you can choose to have either sleeves or deluxe components.
Deluxe components.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And those cards are just going to go shitter and shitter. And then you're going to have Dusty over it, and he's going to be... bending the cards, motherfucker.
The only reason I sleeve is for shuffling purposes.
It's only for shuffling, not for... Even though my cards in Scholars are starting to look a bit shabby.
No.
All right.
No, mainly... So that was an easy one for me.
That was an easy one.
Deluxe components.
All right.
Okay. Metal coins. Metal acrylic coins. I mean, could you play Castles of Burgundy without those acrylic?
Oh, I could, but would I? I'm not sure.
Honestly, could you?
No.
If I was to look at this lovely poster behind you that you've made with all the old cardboard tokens that are on there,
and tiles that fill
check
that
out,
thing
check
up.
Out the picture on Facebook.
Yeah.
If I was to rip those all off
and say
and set up, let's play Castles of Burgundy right now with them.
Yeah. No. You got me. You got me. All right. Over to you for number 8.
Number 8. One of these games I know you've only played once, and the other only a handful of times.
Okay.
But Nidavellir or Ra?
Ooh. Okay. I like what you've done there. I like Ra. You love Ra. And I haven't put Ra in this list anywhere because I know that Ra wins any competition you put in front of it, basically. Nidavellir or Ra? Okay, so they're similar in that, you know, they're heavily built around auction spaces. I think Ra is... there's a lot more chanting at the table with Ra.
Ra, Ra, Ra.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot more sort of, ah, moments with Ra. I'm going to choose Nidavellir. I think, for me, I prefer to play... I'll play Ra any day. And particularly, you know, Super Trooper's got the platinum level Ra with the...
Deluxe components.
Deluxe components, all the chonky bits, the woefully unnecessary metal... What are they called? Cartouches. You know, the Egyptian cartouches in place of point counters... I didn't want to say woefully unnecessary. 90% of what's in the bunker is woefully unnecessary, so I'm completely in support of that. But I think, and it may be because Nidavellir is new, you know, and we've only played it the once, but I thought the set collection was really interesting, the different ways that, I mean, look, they've got a lot in common, to be honest. The set collection in Ra is really interesting as well. I think you've got a little more agency, just a little more agency in Nidavellir as to how you build your sets. Not a lot, because again, it's random card draws and you're bidding on random card draws, but I think Nidavellir edges it out, and I'm really looking forward to playing it with the expansion, which is called Thingvellir. For some reason I've never bothered to look up. It's the weirdest name for an expansion.
Thing is it's a Norse term.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it's in theme there somewhere.
They didn't just go, what do we call the expansion? Thing. Thingvellir.
All right.
No, good, it's actually good a thing.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a thing. All right. My next one for you, and I think I'm on number 8 now, if I'm counting right.
Yes.
It's my 8.
Yep.
This is Dr. Knizia versus Dr. Knizia.
Oh, yes.
And they're both games that I like. They're both games that we've talked about or I've talked about on the pod before. I've played one of them, I think I've played both of them twice. I might have that wrong. And that is Through the Desert or Cascadero.
I think it's Through the Desert.
Okay. Not burying the lead on that one?
No, no, no. I think some of these, it's like the first thing that comes to your head, you just got to say it. I think it's Through the Desert. I think it's a little bit cleaner.
Yeah.
I think Cascadero is fun because it cascades and the little endorphin hits every time you do something which does something which does something which does something.
And let me be clear, I'm shit at both of these games. I love playing them.
Oh, me too. Don't worry.
Really shit at both of them.
I think the cascading in Cascadero where, as I said, like you do something which gives you something which gives you something.
And you get those tracks on the side that bump up.
Yeah. And you can do that. That feels fun, but sometimes you lose track of it a little bit. You lose track of the tracks. But I think Through the Desert is just that much cleaner. And I think it also is meaner. I think Cascadero, you're too focusing on your own thing to try and be mean, whereas I think Through the Desert is designed to be mean.
Yeah.
You're in each other's way. You're blocking each other's way. I think that makes it a bit more of a fun game.
It's almost a take that tile placement game. It's not tiles. They're little pastel camels that you can't keep straight in your head halfway through the game. But it's very take that. It's like, screw you, I've got that space. And now you have to do something totally different. And it's another one of those games where if you're playing... Does it play five?
Through the Desert plays five. Castero, four.
I think we've played Through the Desert at four. I don't think I've played it at five.
I have played it at five.
I don't think I have.
Yeah.
And I know at four, by the time it comes around to your turn again, it's a different board again. It's like there's no... It's like playing Sagrada. There's no point at looking at anything until it's like one person away or two people away from your turn, because the space you want is going to be ruined by the time it comes back to you. All right, back to you for number seven.
Number seven, two games that I've never played, but they have a theme together, and that is 20 Strong or Buttons and Bugs.
Oh, okay. This is an easy one for me. It's 20 Strong. Okay. And that's not because I don't really love Buttons and Bugs. I've taken it traveling with me three times and I can always get a little bit of it in. And the nice thing about Buttons and Bugs is you can play the whole 22 or 24 scenarios, whatever it is, or you can just throw it down and go, I'm playing scenario 9. I don't have a lot of time. I'm going to play scenario 9. I'm going to auto level up my whatever. 20 Strong is a lot more game, and it's the same system that's built around them. And one of the things that I love about 20 Strong is that they've actually managed to make, I'll be clear, the 20 Strong game, core game, which is called Solar Sentinels, that's their IP for their core game of 20 Strong, I think it's the crappiest of the lot. Like, I don't think it's... I mean, the art's really wild and cool, and it's... I mean, and 20 Strong is a hard game. I think I've played maybe 15, 20 games of 20 Strong. I might have won two. And when you're playing a quick, little, easy setup solo game, that's kind of what I want. I want something I'm not going to breeze through and win. But when you play the Too Many Bones 20 Strong, it feels like mini Too Many Bones. And when you play the Victorum 20 Strong, it feels like mini Victorum. They've managed to capture, you know, the essences of these other IPs and build them into this system. I'm all in for Tanglewoods, which is the, it's the Snow White, what are the three heroines in Tanglewoods? That's the Manny Tremblay version. It's a trio of games coming out for 20 Strong. It's Snow White, Little Red Riding Hood, and something else. Alice in Wonderland. Who is Alice? And then in the Cloudspire campaign, they've got a Cloudspire 20 Strong deck coming. And then they've announced, but they haven't done a release date or anything, there's a Nemesis 20 Strong deck coming as well. I like 20 Strong because it's imminently portable, and there's a lot... If I take 20 Strong away with me, I've got a lot more gameplay. But I love Buttons and Bugs because I can throw Buttons and Bugs down and play three scenarios and walk away. You can save it in a heartbeat. It's Gloomhaven, teeny, teeny, tiny. But 20 Strong is excellent. The dice stink, I will say. They still smell. There was something with those dice on release that, in fact, so much so that with the recent Tangled expansion that's coming out, they've offered new dice. Because there was something in the production of the dice, when you open them up, they just smelled like gasoline. And they still, despite leaving them out in the sun, leaving them in the air, they still have that mild woof of death on them, which I suppose is also thematic. All right, mine back to you for number seven is another component question. And I actually can't pick which way you're going to go on this, because I know, like me, you're fans of both of these, and that's minis or metal coins?
Metal coins.
So, Anachrony without the minis then?
Yes.
Oh!
If it came down to metal coins for other games, mm-hmm. then yeah. I've also got the metal components for
Anachrony. That's true. That's true.
I think a grey mini is worse than a standee.
But okay, so a painted mini for, say, Aeon Trespass, which I've just delightfully... I had a big day of painting yesterday, guys. I'm getting caught up. So we can't lose now that the minis are painted. It's not possible. You'd rather play that with cardboard standees and have metal coins?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
I think in this day and age, though, I think with like a grey mini, you can just undercoat it. You could just...
You can.
And then just do a contrast paint of one color over it completely.
You can see the Temenos boss over there. It's just been undercoated and dry brushed with white. It actually looks pretty good. You know, and I think with that one, I'm actually just going to go with like a Greek marble finish on it because it's got that kind of columny feel. But okay.
Something like Gloomhaven and Frosthaven, I think, do the best of both worlds where they have the minis for the heroes and then all the monsters are standees.
So you'd rather play Gloomhaven with metal coins versus minis for your heroes?
Gloomhaven, yes. Frosthaven, you don't need the coins, unfortunately. Coop has the metal coins of Frosthaven, and they're useless.
They are useless. All right. Interesting. All right. Back to you for number six.
Number six. I've only played one of these, and I don't think you've played one of them multiplayer, which means for you it's going to be a solo question.
Okay.
And that is Weather Machine or Inventions?
Okay. So... Oh. Okay, Clappers, you know I'm a Lacerda whore. I guess I've got to... Can I give... two answers?
No.
Okay.
It's this or that. It's not this or that or that.
What I'm saying is, can I answer this as a solo game or as a multiplayer game? Because I haven't played Weather Machine multiplayer.
Well, then you can't answer it in multiplayer, can you?
I'm going to be honest, it's going to be Weather Machine. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough one because I think Inventions is one of his best games for integration of theme, integration of actions around the board. I think the way the board interplays with itself makes the most sense of many of his games. You know, you've got the world traveling and bringing your scholars back or your workers back and forth, and then you've got the spaces where you're choosing your action, and I think they all make sense. And you've got, you know, the tiles for your different discoveries, and I think the way they evolve in all makes sense, the way they interplay, and the way the influence track works to give you bonus actions, I think it all makes so much sense. I think the theming... Weather Machine solo, you're playing against saboteurs, and they're basically running around on your Weather Machine, smacking it with wrenches and messing it up. And I think that, and it shouldn't be the answer, but I actually think the art on Weather Machine just sucks me in. It's got that steampunk art, that Ian O'Toole steampunk art. It's the board almost has a Botoku look about it, in that when you look at it, you go, oh my lord, there's so much on that board. But once you unpick the iconography... Because the Tool's iconography, we're about to set up Voidfall today, and Voidfall's a triumph on iconography. The iconography in Weather Machine is excellent. I think it just nudges it out. I do love Inventions, but I think Weather Machine nudges it out. That's a tough one.
There you go.
All right. Number six, back to you. These are two of your... if they're not both in your top 10, they're close. And that is choosing between Terraforming Mars or Race for the Galaxy.
Race for the Galaxy.
Okay.
I think it does a lot of what Terraforming Mars does, but it doesn't really.
They've got a lot of similarities.
They've got the iconography and stuff, you know, trying to play off. But I think Race for the Galaxy, it's just so quick.
Yeah.
Once you learn the game, it does have a little bit of a barrier to entry, but once you learn Race, it's just so easy to play.
Yeah.
You shuffle cards up. And then you just draw cards, play cards, draw cards, play cards.
Yeah, like I have to. I think I struggled with my first three games of Race. We played Race at your place many years ago. And I came home and I bought the app. And I played the app like 15, 20 times in a sitting. And it was very quick. And by the end of it, I'm like, oh, okay, I see. I get it. Because you've got a lot of that three-way scoring and three-way card interplay. But never playing Terraforming Mars again?
But I think the map in Terraforming Mars is great. Because you can look at it at the end of the game and you go, I built that.
Yeah.
You know, you go like... I built that as opposed to 12 cards in Race for the Galaxy. And you go, oh yeah, I played those cards.
Yeah.
But I think the gameplay in Race trumps the gameplay in Terraforming Mars.
And it is a race.
It literally is a race.
Yeah. I've had turns in Race for the Galaxy or waiting for my turn where my heart's pounding in my chest thinking, is Dusty going to end this game with his one card? Am I going to get to play this card? And I've had games where I've felt that pressure.
And sometimes it becomes a gamble. Do you go, do I play this knowing... might have another turn, or am I playing this and it's going to be my last because, you know, Hammers or Dusty's got another card.
He's got a game ender. Yeah. All right. Back to you for number five. We're halfway.
Number five, Nucleum versus Brass.
Oh. I have a love-hate relationship with both of those games, and that I do love them both. I think they're both superb games. They break my brain, as you'd want, you know, and I think I've only played Brass once or twice. You played it twice.
But to be fair, you've only played Nucleum once or twice.
That's true. No. That's also true. I've had the pleasure of playing Nucleum solo a few times, and the solo Nucleum is fine. It's not something I go, hey, I've got time to kill, I'm going to play Nucleum. I think the way you earn points in Brass is a little more transparent, as in it's a little easier to look at the board state and go, I know I can get points. Nucleum, it's not that it's occluded, but like, I still sometimes can't get my head around how does the Nucleum work when it's that three-way of, well, you play your Nucleum, and then you got to get your Root, and then you flip this one, and then you get that one. And I think if I played both of them two or three more times, it would be Nucleum. But I think as it sits right now, it's Brass.
Okay.
And I think if we played two or three more rounds of each, it would be Nucleum, because that would sort of cement the gameplay. Because I think the Nucleum gameplay, that mechanic of you've got your tiles to take a turn, or you burn them on the board to build, I think it's really clever. And I remember the first time I played Brass, when you get to the second half of Brass, it's basically like you're Monopoly flipping the board and go, start again, mofo. And I was like, what? Wait, what? Where did that come from? I think that's excellent, because you can plan for that, but also you can't. I mean, you can. But
you have to as well.
Yeah,
you've got to get some level two thing out. You've got to get some level two thing out. To have a basis.
That's right. And I think it's fantastic. So I think right now Brass edges it out. I think if we played them both two or three more times, I think it would probably be Nucleum.
Well, then we have to play both two or three more times.
Deal. All right. So this one is another broad brush question. It's not about specific games. This is, and for this, I want you to imagine your game collection at retail price, not not the prices we've paid for our Kickstarters and whatnot. So, for example, Raw, I think, is $87 retail, just as an example. Mm-hmm. So you can keep all your games worth under $100 or all your games worth over $100.
Under 100.
Okay, tell me why. Tell me what the favorites are to edge that out.
I think I would be able to keep more games.
More games?
Like, you'd lose some of the big games.
Yeah.
But you'd keep all the...
You're losing Rococo. You're losing all your big Euros. You're losing Terraforming Mars.
Not all
Mars.
The big Euros. You're losing all the big fancy component Euros. Like, right. Like Rococo is it's like an $80 game, but it's put a dress on and it's now made itself $200. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And that's the only reason it's that price. But I think there's so many other games under 100 that I could have a lot more fun with going forward.
All right. Okay. Fair. Back to you for number four.
Okay. This is the one I thought you might have posed to me.
Uh-huh.
But you've already used one of the games already. So for you, it's Ark Nova or Terraforming Mars.
Oh, I do love both of those. Okay.
And I think they are closer than Terraforming Mars and Race.
For me, for sure.
I mean, in terms of the gameplay.
Oh, the gameplay for sure.
Symbology.
We're including all the expansions?
Sure.
Okay. I think Ark Nova edges it out. I love Terraforming Mars. Terraforming Mars was one of my first loves of modern board gaming, as I know it is for a lot of people. It's one of those ones that people jump into and go, oh my god, this is what board games look like. I think Ark Nova, I think, is probably the game we've played the most.
Yeah, together, you and I, yes.
In, you know, definitely. Within two player and with other people with three and four. And I think Marine Worlds makes it something that is, you know, a lot of expansions come out and they dilute the game, or they make the game not necessarily better, they just make it more. I think Marine Worlds made it a better game. And I think I could play Ark Nova three times in a day and not be sick of it by the third game, because it's the games roll out so differently. You start with a different map. You start, particularly with Marine Worlds, you start with those asymmetrical action cards. I love Terraforming Mars. I will play Terraforming Mars any day of the week, but I think if I had to choose between them, it would be Ark Nova. Yeah. That's a good one. All right, back to you. These games are very, very close, both in spirit and in I guess what they are, and I love both these games, and I can't pick which. Anyway, I'll just get straight to it. It's Blood Rage or Ankh. The first hesitation of the day.
Ooh, I think it's Blood Rage at the moment, only because we've played more. I think what Ankh does really well, and it's controversial for a lot of people, is the merge mechanic.
Yeah.
I think it's really clever.
Yeah.
but I don't think it works too well at three players because it suddenly becomes almost a two-player game.
But can I say, Ankh at two players is one of the best experiences I've ever had at the table. Aside from the fact that we screwed a rule so badly, but we screwed each other.
The action selection in Ankh is fantastic. It's so tense.
Yeah.
It's Zug Zwang. Like, you don't want to do something because you're making it... You're setting up your opponent to do something. Like, that is really good. But I think it comes down to... I think Blood Rage is just that little bit cleaner.
Yeah.
Which I think makes it a bit more fun.
Yeah.
I think... And Ankh, I think I'd only want to play it at four players. Because I think when you have the merge in that, it becomes a four-player game down to a three-player.
Yeah.
Whereas that three-player becomes three down to two, which kind of is a little bit... I think if you start Ankh at two players, it's great. But when you've got the three-player map, and it makes it too big for a two-player game. So I think Blood Rage gives it the nudge just at the moment.
Yeah, nice. All right, back to you for number three.
Okay. These are both games I own, but I know you love a lot.
Okay.
And so that is Three Ring Circus or Lacrimosa.
Oh, I do love both of these games. Okay. So Three Ring Circus, I love how tight it is. You know, and I think the more we get down this path, the more I think De Vere is really going to be one of these board game publishers to watch, because they're just pumping out quality after quality after quality, and they're managing to squeeze it in ever smaller boxes for some reason. But Three Ring Circus, that board, it starts off... We've played it at two, we've played it at three, we've played it at four.
We played it at four at PlayCon.
We did play it at four at PlayCon. And I think the way that it scales is excellent. I don't think I've ever played a game of Three Ring Circus that hasn't scaled really well. And the way that board shrinks as the game goes on, you know, the last 25% of the game... is like literally the last 6% in hours, you know, like the last quarter of the game goes so quickly, and then before you know it, it's done. Lacrimosa, oh man, Lacrimosa. If you haven't played Lacrimosa, Lacrimosa is like a card programming game, and there's this dual card market, and you're traveling around and then the countryside, and then you've also got the Lacrimosa that you're finishing the composure of down the bottom. The decision space is so painful in a great way. I'm going to give it to Lacrimosa on this one. I do love both of those games. And I just think that where Three Ring Circus, I think, it doesn't let itself down, but, and this is really nitpicking here, is in those city goals, it's too hard to hit the city goals.
Yeah, they are very specific.
Yeah, you've got to have like a level 12 orange performer or exactly a level 9 blue or whatever it is, you know. And and we're getting into nitpicking here, but it's one of those things that you can't achieve that goal unless you just get lucky on the card flop, you know, or you draw something out of the market and you go, I remember playing games where in my first hand I had three of them. In my first hand. And I'm like, well, happy days. I've got three of the goals I need to achieve before I've drawn another card. And whereas I think Lacrimosa is a lot more determinative, you know, in the gameplay. I don't think there's any moment in Lacrimosa where you rely... I mean, obviously you've got the market, which is what it is, but it's a scaled market, you know.
The deck's graduated.
The deck's graduated. So, you know, yeah, Lacrimosa. Lacrimosa is excellent. I really love Lacrimosa. All right, so number three for me is two games that I now love both. I've always enjoyed one, and I've only recently come to love the second one, but I know they're two of your favorites and the ones you always want to bring out on birthdays, whatever the case is, and that is Root or Cthulhu Wars.
I thought this one was going to come up.
Root or Cthulhu Wars?
I think the answer is Root.
Yeah.
I think Cthulhu Wars is a little bit more of an event game.
Yeah.
I think there is a good game under there. Like, sure. under all the big honkin' chonky miniatures, I think there is a good game there.
Yeah.
But I think the game in Root is better.
Yeah.
I think, though, I think the asymmetry in Root feels more than the asymmetry in Cthulhu Wars.
Yeah.
I think...
It's harder to get your head around.
Yeah. I think... But maybe it's also... That makes it... easier to understand harder to understand the asymmetry in Cthulhu Wars, because it's every faction's like 60% the same.
Yeah.
So you're like, wait, what's that remaining 40%? Oh, what is it? Whereas in Root, you go, I know my faction is completely different to yours. So it's kind of, I think, easier to understand that asymmetry, if you know what I mean.
I do. I know I play both those games by totally giving up on trying to understand everyone else's faction and just hoping for the best with mine, because there's so much going on. Yeah. So I thought it might be Root, but, you know...
And Root does not have miniatures.
No, it doesn't. It has mini. It has meeples.
It has...
Animeeples.
Yeah, screen-printed animeeples.
Yep, okay. All right, number two.
Number two. Two solo... Well, no, not solo games, but two games you've played solo... Tantagrail, Kings of Ruin, or ISS Vanguard?
This is actually an easy one. I do love both those games. It's Tantagrail, for sure. They are both excellent, and I have played both of them solo. But the reason I will choose Tantagrail is I think the writing's better. I think that the pacing is better. There's a lot more fail forward in Tantagrail, whereas ISS Vanguard, if you fail a planet, you have to go back because there's stuff on that planet you need to go forward. And that's fine. But sometimes, like a planetary exploration in ISS, it'd be 2 hours, 2.5 hours, and then you're either evacuating, whether you're choosing to evacuate or you're evacuating because everybody's dead. The nice thing, though, about ISS Vanguard is when you do go back to that planet, you're not starting from scratch. You reset the planet to the way it was when you left it, which I think is really clever, and a lot of games don't do that. Like, if you're redoing a Gloomhaven scenario, for example... Because you redo, there's no fail forward in Gloomhaven, is there?
No. Like
you've got to redo the scenario.
You don't have to.
No, but if you want the rewards for that, yes, for example, yeah. You've got to.
And you can even replay them once you've finished them as well.
Absolutely. Whereas in ISS Vanguard, if you go back to the planet, you have notes on a save card for that particular planet. You can set it up with the discoveries that you've already made are in place. You're not. It's like the team that was there and died. Everything's still laying out for you. You don't have to go back and start from scratch. So it's not a super grind. But in Tantagrail, if you failed an interaction, and I know you've just started, but if you failed an interaction with one of the Kings of Ruin, or, you know, which are kind of like mini boss battles, there's really no scenario that holds it. It's much more seamless. It's that branching tree of story, and it sucked me in to. And I know I've talked about this on the pod before, but I played Tantagrail without taking a breath. Like, it sat on the table, and I think I finished it in 6 weeks. And any game I was playing in between was on the dining table upstairs. Both excellent. And remarkably, both very different in that, you know, the resolution in ISS is dice-driven, but it was interesting dice. You know, you had 12 different symbols or something on these dice, or 6 different symbols, and in different combinations depending on how you upgraded your individual characters. And if somebody died... It was the person who was basically piloting that pile of dice. You didn't start from scratch and have to build up again. You just went to recruit. You recruited some more newbies. They went to level one. And the difference between a level one and a level three is how many of those dice they could take into a scenario. So you wanted to take level three characters because they could take all the dice. Level ones could only take something like 6 or 7 dice, which means they get tired sooner. The gameplay was great. Whereas in Tantagrail, you're chaining cards. And the card chain action in Tantagrail, I think, is super clever. I think the way, not just chaining cards with either yourself, or you know, you can also chain with the other people at the table, and it's all open information, and you can go, well, I can do this, what can you do? You're playing it solo, so you're talking to yourself, respective voices in my head. But Tantagrail, 100% it was Tantagrail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number two is another category question for you. It's games, but I want you to choose between Arkham Horror or Dr. Knizia.
As in... Arkham Horror, the card game.
Yeah.
Versus
all your Dr. Knizia games. Keep one.
I'd have to choose the good doctor.
Yeah.
I think as much as I love Arkham Horror.
No, I'm pretty sure Arkham Horror is in top three for Super Trooper.
As much as I love Arkham Horror, not being able to play any of the Knizia games.
I mean, that is 749 games to choose from.
Yeah, you'd be keeping one to get rid of 1,000. No, it's got to be Dr. Knizia. I think his games, they feel a completely different niche to Arkham Horror.
Of course they do.
Like, completely different. But the range of the Good Doctor's games is so great. And they all feel a different thing. You know, you push your luck, you got your auction games, you got your tile placement. And he seems to have almost the best of each of those categories.
Yeah, all right.
So I think it would have to be the Good Doctor.
Awesome. So we're on to number one now?
Number one. Number one for you, Voidfall, which we're looking at right here.
I figured it was coming out at some point.
Versus Arx on the other side of the room.
Oh, no, it's Voidfall. I mean, I love Arx. Voidfall's my baby. That said, we haven't played the Blight of Reach campaign yet, so I can't see anything kicking Voidfall off my number one space anytime soon. And also, Voidfall as a solo game is a triumph. It is a wonder of game design. Arcs, you can't play solo. There's a fan variant for solo that's out, but I wouldn't even be willing to try, because I think the joy of Arcs is that pain around the table, that mutual pain of the decision space. Everything I decide causes pain. Everything you decide causes pain. But it's not mean. Like, it's just the game, you know? And it's not like no one... We've only played Arcs, I think, twice. No one's ever left the table dirty over the experience, you know? It's like, oh, well, you know? Whereas Voidfall... I'm not saying anyone leaves the table dirty, but Voidfall is... It's kind of untouchable.
I thought there was going to be an easy answer there for you, yeah. But I thought they are similar-ish games.
They are similar. So that's why I thought after 7 or 8 runs of the Blight of Reach campaign, you never know. But then Voidfall's got an expansion coming to crowdfunding next year, which I'm assuming is just going to be more tiles, more factions, more scenarios, which is a really easy... There's room in the box for all of that, so fingers crossed.
I just didn't know what else I could put up against Voidfall. That's similar.
Yeah, my children. I don't know. Still a tough call.
Voidfall or the Peanut?
Yeah, I don't know. Gotta get back to you on that one. All right, my last one for you is a little more... It's less about a game versus a game. It's a life choice. You can have unlimited free time, but only a tiny collection of board games, or unlimited board games and a very tiny amount of free time.
Oh, the unlimited free time, for sure.
But you're only going to play like 10 games again for the rest of your life.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's because the unlimited free time comes with all the money, because you don't have to work.
Well...
So therefore, it's the unlimited free time.
All right. Okay. I thought it would be harder than that.
Especially if I got to choose what those 10 games were.
Yeah, which I suppose you probably would.
You could choose some games that you could... Like, you choose Dominion, and there's like however many combinations of kingdoms you can get these days.
Sure.
And
I choose Aeon Trespass 5 Cycles, Kingdom Death Monster, Dominion, everything Arkham Horror. Yeah, okay. Fair play.
Yeah.
All right.
That's an easy one for me.
That concludes our 10 This Is or That's. For dessert, dear clappers, we are going to do the same again, but these are non-board game related questions. So you're going to learn a little bit about James and Super Trooper. And this is a this or that. And I'm going to play hardball on this one. You can choose one and the other one is gone from your life forever. So do you want to go first again?
Sure. So for you, because we don't know what each other's topics are.
Nope.
For this top three.
This is totally open. We have no idea. This could be anything.
So... What do you do for a living, James?
I work in executive level management of hospitality, but I'm a chef by trade.
A chef by trade. What do chefs do?
We cook. You're going to say I can have the kitchen or the bunker, aren't you?
No. So the top three, or these three, this or that's for you, are food related.
Okay.
So
I will admit two of yours are also food related.
So number three is, I don't know if it's an easy one, but it's a simple one to start anyway. Pork or beef?
Wow, okay. So knowing full well there's a 7-kilo brisket sitting on the smoker right now for later today, but I'm Canadian, and the number one meat we eat in Canada is pork. And if I have to choose one, remembering that cows don't make bacon, it's pork for me. Pork neck is one of my favorite cuts. We eat a lot of it. One of our favorite sort of game night dishes that I make here is pozole rojo, which is a Mexican pork stew with pork belly and pork neck. I think beef is extraordinary. I'm a chef. I'm also a qualified butcher, and I love meat. If I had to pick one, it would be pork. I think it's not that it's more versatile, but it's more usable in all things I love. You know, if I had to pick between bacon and beef short ribs, it would be bacon. As much as that would probably kill me sooner, it would be bacon. Yes, it is pork for me.
There you go.
All right, so my number three for you is also a food question. We go back and forth, Super Trooper and I, hosting game days on Fridays when we both have the day off, my place and his. And our food of choice on game days, Super Trooper often makes jaffles. For those of you overseas who don't know what a jaffle is, it's like a toasted sandwich. It goes in a little waffle iron, and shazam, it comes out in pre-cut pieces. It's hotter than the sun and delicious. And at my place, I typically bake a little bit of focaccia. I got some fresh focaccia upstairs. We're at my place today, and I do paninis. So my question to you is, jaffles or paninis?
That's so easy.
I thought it would
be. It's paninis.
Oh, is it really? It's
paninis.
I know. I thought for sure.
You're homemade focaccia with whatever else you
but
put on
them. But
you're
such a jaffle slut. I thought for
it's
sure.
Because they're easy. I can't bake bread like you can. No, that's easy.
I thought for sure.
Oh, no.
Because I'll fill it as well. Super Trooper has the same jaffle every time. It's a pizza jaffle. It's pizza sauce. It's cheese. It's ham and salami. And I think I've seen you eat 500 of those in 4 years. And I thought for sure. And I thought for sure it was going to be jaffles.
No, okay. your focaccia is very, very good.
It is very good. All right. Well, that was my number three.
Number two, food related slash tangentially food. Cheese.
Uh-huh.
Or red wine.
Oh, sugar balls. Oh, okay. I have a mantra in my personal life that I know Super Trooper is well versed with, and that is I save all my calories for cheese. When someone offers me a chocolate, someone offers me a piece of cake, someone offers me whatever, my standard answer is I save all my calories for cheese. Thank you very much. Let me tell you, I love a red wine. It's going to be cheese. 100% it's going to be cheese. If you said I've got to give up red wine, but I can eat cheese, and, you know, I'm not saying I'm going to eat cheese exclusively, but if I can only have one, if a doctor said you can have cheese or red wine, you have to give one up, it would be cheese. Because cheese is like, it's better than freaking therapy, right? Cheese is just happiness in my mouth. There are hundreds of cheeses in the world. I know there are thousands of vintners that make red wine, but if I had to pick one, it would be cheese. That was mean. All right, number two for you is not food related. Super Trooper and myself, but we're Super Trooper and I, we both have very deep leanings into fantasy and sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
We read a lot of it, we watch a lot of it, we're both big fans. And so for you, it's, I want to know, is it Star Wars or The Expanse? That's the longest bit of silence we've had in this show.
If you had have asked me until I watched some of the recent Star Wars stuff, it could have been Star Wars easily.
Yeah. But you have watched it.
I think this is really tough because I think all the stuff around Star Wars tends to be good. Like all the... Like I grew up playing the X-Wing computer games and the Dark Forces games, and
I think Rogue One's a better movie than the last five Star Wars core movies.
Yeah,
I know what you mean when you say the stuff around
the
it.
The core Expanse versus the core Star Wars is so much better, which is why it's making it tricky. So I think I'm going to choose Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think I like the stuff around Star Wars more than I like the stuff around The Expanse.
Sure.
In terms of all the board games.
Yep.
There's only one Expanse board game, which we still haven't played yet.
Yeah.
I've got that sitting at home. But yeah, all the other stuff around Star Wars means I don't want to give that up.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I thought for sure.
Having him said that, The Expanse is really, really good. Everyone should go and watch it.
Everyone should go watch The Expanse. Absolutely. Take 3 months off after listening to this podcast and go watch all The Expanse.
Nah, you can do it in a week.
With a lot of Red Bulls. Right, that was my number two.
Number one.
Uh-huh.
Still food related.
Uh-huh.
Truffles.
Uh-huh.
Versus something you've already mentioned, bacon.
Wow. Okay. All right, dear Clappers, am a truffle whore. I'm also Canadian, and so bacon was the first thing I swapped to after breast milk. It's going to be bacon. It's going to be bacon because literally in a week, I eat overnight oats and very, very sedately breakfast Monday to Saturday because every Sunday I have bacon for breakfast. Every Sunday, like clockwork, it's a ritual for the Fox and I. We sit down, we have a fresh loaf of sourdough out of the oven, we have bacon and eggs, and bacon appears in a lot of my life choices. That is a tough one though because when it's truffle season, I get it straight from the farm in Tasmania, and it literally goes on everything for 7 weeks. Oh, good one. All right. My number one.
Yes.
Okay, so a little bit of backstory here. I am Super Trooper's dealer for a number of things. It's another bacon question. Okay, and there are two things that I make semi-regularly for Super Trooper because they are two of his favorite things. One is maple bacon jam. Mm-hmm. And the other is this delightful Indonesian chili paste that uses duck fat as a base. It's Aleppo chilies out of Turkey. It's full of ginger and garlic. It's a little bit of fish sauce, and it's bound with duck fat. It's cooked very slowly. And it's a couple times a year. Super Trooper goes, oh, would you do a run, please? And so I do. I do a run. I bottle it up. I drop it at his place. He pays me money for the ingredients. And so your number one is bacon jam or Indonesian chili paste?
This is simpler than I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the chili paste.
Is it really? Oh, and honestly, I would have picked bacon jam.
I use that in so many things.
Yeah.
Like Jaffles.
Yeah, like Jaffles, yeah.
But also you put it, you mix it into a pizza sauce.
Yeah.
When you make a pizza.
Yeah.
Like it's just...
I mix it with mayonnaise for sandwiches.
Yeah, I think it's more versatile than the maple bacon jam.
Like, sure.
Maple bacon jam in a Jaffle is phenomenal.
It is.
On top of a burger. It's great.
The peanut had her first maple bacon jam and egg roll for breakfast last week, and she basically gave me a 4-minute serve as to why she was 9 years old and she'd never had maple bacon jam and eggs in a pillowy little milk bun before. She was like, 9 years I could have been eating this? You're the worst father alive. She literally gave it to me for 4 minutes straight. Right.
No, it's that chili paste.
Okay.
There's a jar thing of, there's 3 jars left in the back of the fridge.
Yep.
Bit by bit, they go down, but nice. Nah.
All right.
That's it.
Well, that concludes OMC's second bonus episode. Big thanks once again to Super Trooper. We will have a few more of these over January because we both have several weeks off and he's got a lovely schedule that was built. There's some really excellent stuff coming over the next 7 weeks. No spoilers here, but we are going to have a bumper 6 or 7 weeks on OMC. You can reach us on all the socials. Find us on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. You can email me at wonmanclapping@gmail.com. Instagram at One Man Clapping with a number. You can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BGG. Subscribe to Guild 4426. There is a plan to have this live over the December-January period. A lot of podcasters are going to be taking time off and not broadcasting because I have time off from work. We're going to ramp up and have a lot more content over the next 2 months. And thank you as always for your time. It's humbling to say the least to know that we have listeners that we've never met. And I'm going to do a shout out country by country here. We currently have listeners in Slovakia, Great Britain, Singapore, Germany, South Africa, Austria, Sweden, Canada, USA, and of course, thank you to all of you down under who devote an hour of your precious time each week. Thank you for your ears. Until next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. Santa's been watching all year. If you've been bad all year, there's no point in a course correction now. Go out with a bang. Send me some pics. Peace out, mofos. Dice they break, echoes pound and hearts they quake.